Welcome to Ahead of the Game, a podcast brought to you by the Digital Marketing Institute. I'm your host, Will Francis, and today I'll be talking to Hannah Scherer, all about webinars for marketing, how we can nurture our audience through quality live and recorded sessions that give them true value along with a positive experience of our brand. Hannah is VP Marketing and Partnerships at Big Marker, a webinar platform. She's a webinar and event tech expert with over 8 years of experience in the webinar space. At Big Marker, she executes all aspects of marketing for them, including webinars, digital media, gated content, programming, and more. And prior to that role, she led business development and customer success initiatives at Big Marker, giving her a pretty complex understanding of both technical and strategic best practice across all of these topics. Hannah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Will. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. Lovely to talk about webinars, something that seems to have exploded in the past couple of years, even though they've been around for obviously much longer than that. So let's just start by kind of setting the scene a little bit for our listeners. How do webinars in general fit into your marketing?
Yeah, it's a great question. So there's a couple of ways, and I think that each of them are really, really important to your marketing mix. The first and foremost is that it's just breaking up the two-dimensional feed of your content. So of course, we want to, you know, think, and we know that everything that we're talking about is very important and very interesting. However, when it's just blog posts and ebooks, it's only going to tap into a couple of those kind of sensory pieces of the, you know, of the human person, which is obviously they're reading something, and you know, it's not necessarily as engaging as something like video content or you know, live content like webinars, which is kind of tapping into that multi-sensory piece. And so again, it's breaking up that two-dimensional kind of content feed when you are producing content, and it's producing that kind of multi-sensory approach to your marketing content. But another thing that I think is really important specifically about webinars is that it helps you engage with your audience a bit better. So when we're talking about, you know, producing live content, really good webinars are always going to have, you know, engagement with their audience. They're going to have Q&A components, polls to, you know, ask questions from their audience members throughout the session. They're really going to be, you know, two-way in the sense that they are not only giving the audience something, but they're also getting something from their audience in return. So I think that that is the best way to kind of utilize webinars. And then of course, you know, just breaking up that content feed and of course, making it a little bit more two-dimensional.
And where in the funnel do you think webinars play the biggest role, or do they actually operate happily through the funnel and just in different ways?
Mm-hmm. Certainly through the funnel. I mean, you definitely want to create content that appeals to everyone, you know, in their buyer journey. But when we see, you know, top of the funnel content, you know, your kind of introductory content or thought leadership content, if you will, with audiences, we definitely see higher, you know, registration rates. So, you know, a lot of top of the funnel content, you know, is going to be highest performing. But as you move down the funnel, obviously you're connecting with your audiences and there's opportunities to learn more about your buyers and your buyer persona. You know, progressive profiling is a really big kind of buzzword in the marketing community right now, which is the concept of building these really robust profiles about your, you know, personas or your, you know, ICPs. And when you have things like a webinar where you can pull out or parse out data that's a little bit more intimate than just, you know, name and email, that helps you kind of build these personas and then also helps you market to them more effectively down the sales funnel. So it is really important, I would say, at any and every stage of the funnel. But, you know, I, of course, at the top, you're going to capture the most audience, if you will.
You are, but it seems like it's about engagement. It's about nurturing. It's about deepening relationships. It's about making someone, turning someone who just knows about you and maybe follows you in social media into someone who's far more involved with you. And so I get that. And is it about super serving this much smaller group of people who are your kind of fans or people who are just that bit more engaged?
Well, I always recommend, or we always recommend, working backwards. So what I mean by that is defining who your ICP or who your persona is that you are trying to market to. You know, who is the ideal purchaser or buyer of your product, and then working backward to develop content that speaks directly to them. We always say, by the laws of marketing, if you create content that appeals to everyone, it therefore, you know, appeals to nobody. We really want to kind of dial in into who we want to, ingest our content, if you will, and then create content for them.
We're making them very specific to attract a specific type of person, rather than just make them appeal to as many people as possible. Because as you say, if you're marketing to everyone, you're marketing to no one. Okay, interesting. So do you consider all webinars to be events, as in event marketing? Are they synonymous?
I think we can say that, you know, webinars certainly fit under the event umbrella, but it's not just for event marketers. I think, you know, any and every marketer who is in the digital or in an online space, which we all should be at this point, right? You're certainly bringing people together for some sort of live presentation, which, you know, as you would for any other event, it is. I would consider event marketing. However, again, it's not just for event marketers. And so when we look at the similarities versus, you know, some of the ways that they're different, you know, similarities, of course, is that you have this live captive audience, or in some cases simulive, which is, you know, this kind of pre-recorded environment, but regardless, you have a live audience. And so, you know, you're connecting with them in the same way that you would at, you know, what we would call like a physical in-person event or a virtual event or something like that. And you also have all of the pre-event promotion that you need to think about. You know, we're sending invitations to these folks. We have to, reach these people because we want them to attend the live event. And then, of course, all of your goals, you know, we want the audience satisfaction to be there, the, you know, return on investment. But obviously, you know, webinars are on typically a much smaller scale than the traditional kind of in-person or the really experiential things that we would expect from kind of larger events. And so obviously there's differences, but I would put webinars in the event bucket because it is similar, just in a different kind of tune than, you know, traditional in-person events.
Yeah. From a marketing point of view, is there something special about the fact that webinars are appointment to view? Like they're quite high stakes in that way. And you are putting a, you know, flag in the ground and saying, we're doing this, it's 6 p.m. on Friday. And, you know, and is there something, because that's not like other forms of marketing. So do you think there is something special and uniquely powerful about that for businesses?
Oh, certainly. I mean, going back to what I was saying before, how it's, you have this captive audience, use it, you know, you want to connect with these people. It's really not advantageous to go in and just spew live content when you have a two-way stream. Breaking it up with Q&A, you know, asking questions of your audience, polling them, sharing something that, you know, they can take away from the conversation. Maybe it's the slide deck, maybe it's a corresponding ebook, whatever it is, you're connecting with these people, and you have the opportunity post-event to, you know, send them a survey and, you know, actually engage with them. Of course, this live event, as you mentioned, it's high stakes, but you can always record that session and you can do so many things with the recording post-event. It's not just this live event. I wouldn't just look at it as this one and done experience, because if you are, or if you aren't doing things like recording, or if you aren't repurposing your content, you know, you're kind of missing the mark. You certainly want to squeeze that lemon for all of the juice it's got, because you are putting in so much time and effort into this one live event.
That's interesting. And the way you described it, you're making it sound that if a webinar isn't two way, like if you're just presenting and then it's thank you very much, that that's a wasted opportunity, right?
Absolutely. I mean, again, why wouldn't you just create a video then? You know, there's so many reasons why you would want to use the webinar as that live forum to connect with your audience. And we do see, you know, especially when you take a look at the stats and the analytics of what you you know, the fruits of your labor, if you will, you will see, at least on BigMarker, you know, how engaged your audience members are. And you can actually learn from that data and say, okay, you know, we were presenting for 30 minutes straight without any Q&A break, without any poll, without any audience engagement. And we do see those numbers decline, you know, meaning that they are not on the tab of your content anymore. Perhaps they're checking email or Facebook or whatever they're doing where they're not on the tab, and it can help you learn from it. So, you know, the best webinar hosts we see are really taking that data and they're doing something with it. And, you know, what they're doing with it is they are making their events more engaging. And that's definitely, you know, the trends that we're seeing moving forward. And what we're moving away from is those really long kind of drawn out events where, you know, it is that one way experience because, you know, it's not really doing much for you. You might as well just produce a video.
I mean, I know you can't design my webinar for me right here and now, but just in over the course of like, I don't know, an hour or two, is there some best practice about how often to have interactive periods, moments?
Definitely. So BigMarker actually just produced a benchmark report for 2023. Highly recommend folks check it out to learn a little bit more. But what we do see, you know, and what I can share with you on kind of a broad strokes level is that connecting with your audience early and connecting with them often is going to produce a really good result. So for example, when we talk about polling, for example, which again, polling is, it produces such a wealth of benefits because not only are you able to ask this really intimate data that is really just exclusive to this one, you know, type of content, you know, I can ask you what do you like or what do you know, or, you know, something that you wouldn't be able to ask in a registration form, for example. You know, when we take those polls and we introduce them early on, so for example, the first 10 minutes of content, you know, it's piquing people's interests. You know, they realize, oh, you know, I'm supposed to engage in this content. I'm not just sitting back and listening. And it keeps people engaged throughout the presentation. And so what we actually found, and we call it the 1-2 punch, is if you want to ask something that, you know, let's say you have a question that you really want to know the answer to. First, get them engaged early on by, you know, polling them very early, you know, again, in the first 10 minutes, let's say. And then hitting them with that 2 punch, you know, that second kind of more impactful poll that you really want to know the results. And you're going to see those numbers or those poll results increase because fear of missing out, you know, that FOMO piece where people are like, oh, shoot, I hear them asking questions. They're getting feedback. They're talking about it. I want to engage. I want to share my opinion on this. You know, people love to share their own opinions. So, you know, that's what we would see in at least with polls. And that would be my recommendation for really engaging folks early on is really capturing that early on.
That's really good. And also, yeah, by asking those questions early on, you're making people feel like, wow, this is for me. You know, this isn't just going to be the same webinar you've held a million times. It gives people a sense that it's going to be in some way tailored to the responses, and people are going to feel like it's for them a bit more personally, right? What do you think about hybrid events? There's been quite a lot of talk about this in recent years, and now a lot of physical events are in some way hybrid events because they're live streaming portions of it or recording portions of it or both. How's that playing out?
I mean, I love hybrid events. I think hybrid is the future of events, full stop. I do recommend that everyone, you know, look into hybrid for their events for a number of reasons, I should say. So the first thing that I will say, and the first thing that we always get, you know, asked here at BigMarker, at least, is like, what is a hybrid event? You know, for folks who are just getting started, I think there's a lot of confusion around what a hybrid event means. And it really, of course, can mean a lot of things. It really is just, when you boil it down, the idea of having some components of your event that are virtual and some components of your event that are in person. And so how you balance the two ends of the scale is up to you. Sometimes people just want a simple live stream of, you know, option for their attendees to attend virtually. Whereas sometimes they want both, you know, full blown events in the virtual space and in the in-person space. And I don't know if I have a whole lot of opinions of, you know, which side you should go on. I think my opinion is dependent on the resources that you have. I would always recommend you don't overcomplicate things. I mean, if you don't have the team, the resources, or the budget to really go full blown, I wouldn't go there. But I would, you know, we always say crawl, walk, run here at Big Marker, you know, start small and scale. But what I can tell you is that the events or the event producers who are doing it really effectively are doing it in a number of ways. So the first one, and this is something that is coming up a lot, but when we talk about enhancing the in-person experience, what it almost always is going to look like is a mobile event app. And again, I'm using Big Marker Speak here because, again, we have our own app, but I'm sure there's many tools out there. But, you know, when we talk about mobile event apps, it's starting with things like, in, you know, enhancing the check-in process. So, for example, going through scanning, you know, your mobile app or, you know, finding something on on an iPad, printing out a badge and then using that QR code on your badge or on your phone to scan into experiences to enhance the, you know, the Q&A, for example, in a live event. I mean, there's so many ways to enhance the experiences for in-person. And then we look at virtual. Obviously, again, you can just live stream it, or if you want to make it engaging and interactive at the virtual level, you can make a full-blown virtual event with things like networking elements, like a virtual expo booth or exhibitor hall, if you will. You know, there's so many ways to optimize that and then bringing the two together. So for example, I mentioned enhancing the Q&A experience. When you have a unified Q&A in a live or an online event where in-person and virtual attendees are able to co-connect, you're getting better results and you're getting higher attendee satisfaction. So, of course, really, really exciting stuff. I mean, we're just bringing tech and, you know, event technology into the 21st century, if you will, you know, because events were so traditional, I guess, for so long. But it's really, really exciting. And I definitely love hybrid. Could talk about it all day.
And do people ever express a concern that having some sort of virtual aspect will cannibalize ticket sales for the physical event? Because people think, well, what's the point in traveling all the way to New York for this? I could just sit at home and watch it online.
Right. So I would say no, but I almost think that it's an even better problem to have, I guess, if you will. And the reason I say that is a couple of things. So the first thing is that the people who want to go in person are always going to want to go in person. We don't see that, you know, those in-person folks will ever sway to want to attend virtually because they see so much, you know, impact in the, you know, the networking opportunities that they have in person, or the experiences that they can cultivate, or they just want to break and they want to, you know, take a nice trip and stay in a hotel, all the great things. However, what we see when we have the virtual piece is there is, it's almost like the key unlocking the door of accessibility. And that is such an exciting piece of the equation because it's something that we never thought about or talked about pre, COVID, when, you know, when this kind of event world got turned on its head and we saw all of the benefits of virtual events, you know, in a lot of industries that never had done virtual events before. So when I talk about accessibility, I mean, the ability to attend when you can't take off work or when you can't get a babysitter or, you know, when you don't have the resources to be able to travel or do what you need to do, you know, the accessibility piece of just being able to log on and attend the event when you want to or when you can just inherently makes the event appeal to more people or be able to attend to more people. And I think that's so important. So I wouldn't say it's cannibalizing. If anything, it's actually going to produce higher attendee satisfaction rates. And of course, if you cast a wider net, you're going to catch more fish. So of course, you're going to have more attendance. So really, really beneficial there.
And are there any examples that you can think of really good hybrid events that you've seen or just, you know, or characteristics of good hybrid events that you've seen just to kind of bring it to life a bit more?
Yeah, so it's a good question. I don't know if I, you know, am able to share any specific examples, but I can talk about, you know, just some examples of what I've seen that work really well. And the first thing is, again, those enhancements of the in-person events. So when I talk about enhancements of the in-person side of things, I mean, you know, getting through the check-in line 10 times faster than you would where you have to stand in a traditional line. You know, being able to do something as simple as scan a QR code on your phone really gets the line moving. And also, again, it helps those data points. But what I would also say is, you know, for the folks who are producing hybrid events where they're doing more than just streaming online, the folks who are doing it really, really well are really thinking about it as two separate events, meaning that I can't translate the magic, I'll call it, of the in-person networking to the virtual realm. So how am I going to offer these networking, opportunities, thank you, if you will, during this virtual realm? And so what we have at least is things like AI-based, matchmaking in the speed networking, if you will, in our tool at least. So things like that to optimize the experiences for both virtual attendees and also in-person attendees, because they are inherently two different events. And I think the people who get that and who are planning that way are doing it really, really well.
Yeah, that's very interesting stuff to think about. I've not thought about, you've talked about more there than just pointing a camera at people on stage and streaming the event. There's a bit more to it than that for sure. Hello, a quick reminder from me that if you're enjoying our podcast series, why not become a member of the DMI so that you can enjoy loads more content from webinars and case studies to toolkits and more real life insights from the world of digital marketing. Head to digitalmarketinginstitute.com/aheadofthegame to sign up for free. Now back to the podcast. Let's talk about webinar marketing. So I want to think about before, I want to think about during, and then I want to think about afterwards. So I've got three very predictable questions coming up for you. So, okay, let's think about before the event. Is there a best practice playbook for promoting a webinar ahead of the appointment to view time that it goes live?
Yeah, definitely. So I guess when we talk about timing, and again, do what works for you, right? But what we typically see in the space is that 1 to 2 weeks in advance is plenty of time to promote a webinar. I've seen 8 days, for example, is kind of like the optimal period because most people register within the week. However, you know, historically, people were promoting their webinars much further out. So if that works for you, that's fine. But who are we targeting and how are we getting these people to register? I think that's a really big question. So the first and foremost kind of thing is that I would say you must, if you aren't doing it, but you know, you certainly should, have a mailing list that you are emailing an invitation to. So it could be a specific invitation to your event, or it could be, you know, linked to your event with other resources. Regardless, if you are hitting your mailing list, your marketing list, or a segment of your list, it doesn't matter. Definitely that is a huge component. I would say the biggest indicator of how many registrants you'll get is how many registrants you have from that list. And also reusing that email to people who didn't open it. This is actually a missed opportunity for a lot of folks is hit your list. So, you know, send your invite or, you know, your email to your list and then change up subject lines and resend it for the folks who didn't open it. You know, think about that. So if you have this webinar, obviously, again, you're putting in a lot of time. And let's say, you know, 2 weeks before our event, we are sending that invite. Don't be afraid to hit that list a few more times for the people who didn't open it, just simply changing the subject line. You would be shocked how many more people are going to open it and click.
Wow. So you really think that the people that are already engaged with you in some way are just so much more likely to actually, you know, the conversion rate on them is going to be so much higher that you should basically chase them down to the ends of the earth until they've agreed to show up for the webinar.
Right, I do. And especially, you know, think about your funnel. I mean, if we are trying to capture these people who are at the tippity top of your funnel and bring them down, we want to have as many points of engagement with them as we possibly can. And we really want to position ourselves as a thought leader. So again, that's number one. Number two is always, you know, thinking of the ways that we can capture these people or our, you know, greater audience outside of our mailing list. So of course, social posts, ads are sometimes a good idea, depending on, if you have budget for it. And then also something that we see that works really well, at least on our end, and with our own webinar marketing, is putting a banner on your own website, you know, thinking about all the ways that people, you know, all of the impressions that you have of people coming to your site who might be interested in this topic. You don't even know, you know, how many people are potentially going to see that and be interested. So it's as simple as putting something like a banner on your site, clickable, you know, that redirects to your webinar landing page, and you'd be surprised how many people register there as well.
Yeah. And do you think, I mean, it sounds like a daft question, but do you think like kind of top of funnel ads? So if I was to splash a load of ads across like Instagram or LinkedIn, does that work well? Or are we more talking about targeting down the funnel with remarketing, using our email list or some other remarketing tactic?
Personally, in my experience, the latter is a better result. I mean, you can certainly try ads. You know, I haven't seen a ton of success with them personally, but you know, it's certainly worth a try. Everybody has their own, you know, their own kind of group of people that they're marketing to, and I think it is important to test and learn. We always do that at BigMarker. You know, we start small and we test and learn, and we decide from that test experience, you know, if we want to double down or triple down or whatever we want to do. You know, I always think that's a good kind of approach, especially when we're kind of experimenting. Another thing that I do want to note too, that is at the top of my list when it comes to kind of growth hacking, if you will, with your webinar promotion, is thinking about kind of joint venture partnerships. And if you can partner with a similar organization or, you know, kind of an adjacent organization, if you will, to co-host a webinar that's beneficial to the both of you and split the registration list. So obviously, you know, you need to make sure that your registration form has opt-in marketing, you know, stuff, language for both of you so that you can get that list and kind of use it for your own marketing kind of initiatives. But regardless, it's a great way to growth hack is, you know, if you're co-promoting to each of your lists and then sharing that registration list.
Yeah. Are there any particular formats of content or formats of promotion? So is it video? Is it typed copywriting? Is there anything you've just seen work particularly well?
Yeah, I've seen video work well. You know, people giving almost like a teaser video, if you will, to the bigger piece of content. Another thing that works well is kind of when you parse out specifically what they will take away from, you know, that event. So again, we see this a lot and it does work well, which is why we see it a lot, is, you know, the five keys to X, Y, and Z, or, you know, the 10 ways you're missing out on, you know, X, Y, Z. So
share some knowledge to give people a little bit of a teaser that they're going to get so much more knowledge on the day.
Right, exactly.
Lovely. Right. Yeah, because I can see how that would work well in like a LinkedIn video ad or something like that, right? So it's the day of the webinar. What's best practice on the day? You know, just as you're about, obviously there's a few bits before you click go live and then there's during the thing. Any sort of best practice there?
So I would say even before the day that you go live, get in and practice. So especially if you have guest presenters, but of course yourself as well, make sure that you are fully familiar with the technology that you're using, and that you've practiced and that you've also tested things like your internet connection and also additional things like maybe, you know, do we want to wear headphones, for example, or do we want to make sure that the host speaker isn't right next to their microphone so it's not causing any sort of feedback loop. So just testing, being exactly sure what you're getting into so that you feel comfortable. The last thing that you want on your mind is, you know, some sort of anxiety about something not working properly, or you not knowing where the button is to click. You just want to feel fully comfortable and confident. So that's my number one kind of tip. But on the actual day of the webinar, a couple of things that can kind of set you ahead. So the first thing is always, you know, preload your content. Make sure that any sort of slides or video or whatever you're using in addition to what you're hosting live, you know, on your mic and webcam is pre-uploaded, and any sort of polls or attendee engagement features, you know, for example, canned questions, which is another thing that I want to talk about, but, you know, making sure all of that is preloaded. So that comes to kind of that second piece of what I want to talk about, which is if you are hosting a Q&A, which again, as we've talked about already in today's session, I highly, highly recommend doing, you know, at least a Q&A at the end, but sometimes folks like to break it up throughout their session, is having some canned questions at the ready. I always aim for around 3 to 4 questions of you know, things that I think people would like to know or that correspond with what we're talking about or something that I want to share. You know, it gives me the opportunity to feed that in. But the reason that you should do that is to set yourself up, I should say, so that there's no dead, awkward space between when you say, does anyone have any questions, to answering those questions. And of course, a best practice is to keep the Q&A window open throughout the duration of your session so that when somebody has a question, they can ask it immediately. But sometimes people need some time to get the juices flowing. And sometimes some of those canned questions then, of course, produce additional kind of snowball questions from that question. And so it helps you, you know, be more prepared. You're not feeling awkward or like, you know, nobody's going to ask anything. You're giving time and the ability for people to think it through. And of course, you have the ability to fill that space as well. So that is a big, big recommendation. Again, just helping you prepare. And the last thing that I would kind of recommend, which I think is a tip that I've had a little trouble learning, but I, you know, with practice, it makes perfect, is looking directly at the camera. So it can feel a bit weird, especially when you have multiple guest presenters and, you know, just human nature. We want to look at that person when they're talking. However, it kind of looks like you're looking down or looking to the left, or it doesn't look like you are looking at them, so to speak, in the recording, which of course you must record your session. That's obviously another tip. But when we do that, when we look at the camera, then it gives us a really crisp, clean result when we are, you know, actually having that recording, which of course we need to repurpose and recycle and reuse, which we talked about a little bit earlier as well. And I have a feeling we'll talk about it next as well.
Yes. Right. That's really good advice, actually. I've probably been in situations where the preparation just hasn't been there. And like you say, preparation is all about removing those little niggling anxieties at the back of your mind and just to let you focus on having a great conversation or delivering a great presentation. And all the other things you said were great too. So, okay, the webinar is coming to a close. Have you got any specific advice about kind of how do you leave it with people? Right. You know, what kind of things do you say to kind of close a webinar, and what are there any, you know, calls to action? What do people expect as an immediate follow up from that? So just thinking about the webinar kind of ending, any ideas there on best things to do?
So the expectation almost always is this session being recorded and can I view or share the recording? So that answer should always be yes. So you should always, again, record your session and you should share it with your audience and make it shareable for others to register for if they didn't catch the live. So that's a very easy win. And that I would say is the biggest expectation. Some of the other things that I think are a best practice, not everyone is using them, but I think is really worth your while is A, to you know, share some sort of shareable. So if it's the corresponding slides or an adjacent handout, like an ebook that corresponds to what you're talking about, or any sort of kind of shareable or freebie that you can give them in the form of a handout or also offer. Again, we talk a lot about offers in that benchmark report. I always highly encourage people to check that out. But for the purpose of today's conversation, sharing something with them at the end so they feel like they've gotten extra or additional kind of value out of your session. And that's really, really important. But then that call to action, in addition to, download this piece of content or access this record or, you know, whatever we're kind of sharing, is to let them know how to reach you. I think that's such a big and underutilized piece that, if it's a conversation and we want them to reach out to sales, for example, or if they have any questions, you know, where are we directing them so that they can continue the conversation? And maybe it's even, hey, email me directly if you have any questions. I've seen that a million times where it's like people are opening up their inbox or their LinkedIn to invite people to reach out if they have any questions. And it just makes it feel a little bit warmer and a little bit more connected with your audience. So I highly recommend that. But one other thing that I would recommend that I truly think is a missed opportunity if you don't do it is sending out a survey, either directly after your session ends or in an email as a follow-up with just a few key questions. So definitely we don't want them to, spend 10 minutes on this, but, you know, asking them how they liked it, you know, what they did or didn't especially like, and then also what they're interested about learning next. It helps you really connect with and engage that audience. It helps you understand and host better content. And it makes you think about things that you probably didn't think about yourself, like, oh, that is an interesting topic. Or, oh, maybe I did go a little bit long in this presentation. Maybe I'll shorten it for next time. So there's so many things that you can do, you know, and I would recommend all of the above, right?
Okay. So then after the webinar, what's the to-do list look like then?
So the to-do list, of course, is to take that registrant list and do something with it. So, of course, you might want to, depending on, you know, the team you're on or the department you're in, share that registrant list with whomever it makes the most sense. Typically, especially in today's conversation as marketers, you know, we are sending that information to our sales team. You know, the sales team should have a plan for, you know, outreach strategy. So, you know, whatever that strategy might be, just making sure that you're disseminating that list. Obviously, the registrant list, of course, but also who attended, who didn't attend, you know, what's next, and thinking through, you know, all of that stuff. Maybe it is, you know, everyone who answered yes to a certain poll question or wanted to know more about X, Y, and Z. You know, you are tailoring that email, that note, that, you know, whatever follow-up you're doing accordingly. And so you can set that on autopilot, or your sales team can reach out individually. It depends obviously, how meaningful that lead is to you. But another thing that I would say is really, really important is, of course, the, you know, analyzing the survey information as well. So I know we've just talked about that, but, you know, just doubling down again and saying, you know, if somebody didn't have a great experience or had some negative feedback, maybe you do want to reach out and thank them for it and make them feel heard. You know, that always kind of turns the frown upside down, if you will.
And then we've got the content. What good uses of webinar recorded content have you seen?
So, like I said, you always must record your session. And the reason being is that there's so much you can do with the recording. So the first and easiest step is to just share the recording with your audience so that A, they can watch it, rewatch it. There's an opportunity to share it, but also the people who registered but didn't access the live session have the opportunity to view the recording. So that's your easiest step. You certainly can publish it, you know, wherever you want. You know, I would say,
is that okay, by the way, to publish a video of a webinar that people were on and asked questions in? I mean, should I ever be worried about privacy, invading attendees' privacy or anything?
So typically, I mean, it will, at least, again, I'm using Big Marker Speak here, so I know it's different between tools, but, you know, with our tool, you know, it's going to only share the content that was shared, you know, in the audience view, I should say. So any mics, webcams, screen sharing, slide sharing, video sharing, but by default, you know, things like the chat and Q&A aren't visible to it within the recording. You could make it visible, but most hosts opt for it to not be included in the recording so that they can share it and it looks more like a polished video than something with a chat feed or something that would, you know, potentially have some privacy issues, like you mentioned. So that's number one. But going back to, you know, some other things that we can actually do with this content, I mean, having that video alone is going to unlock a lot of doors. The first thing is, of course, turning it into something like a podcast, you know, ripping just the MP3 file from it and putting it somewhere, parsing out, you know, individual kind of chapters or chunks. We call it snackable pieces of content, where you have, you know, something that you can put on social media, for example. Maybe you want to parse out most kind of interesting question or bullet point, put it on LinkedIn, and then people are enticed to register for the recording. But, you know, however you slice and dice that video, another option that you have is to repurpose it as what we would call a simulive event. So in Big Marker Speak, again, we call it an automated or an evergreen webinar. This is the principle of taking a recorded video and making it seem like it's happening live. So again, with our tool, you can add in chats and polls and pop-ups and make it just as engaging as the live event, but you're setting it on a timeline, so you don't even have to be there. You still have the audience engagement, so you can host a live Q&A or you can go live at any time. But just taking that content and plopping it into something that can autoplay as many times as you want it to, now it makes this content infinite. It makes it evergreen. You know, that's why we call it that. So, you know, again, you can do so much with that video. And if you aren't recording your sessions, that's the number one thing that I would recommend as just an easy next step so that you can get so much more value and ROI from that one little piece of content that you created.
Yeah. I recently was doing a bit deeper research on Gary Vaynerchuk, who we've known about for years. He's one of the noisiest people in marketing. And, but very, you know, to be fair to him, he's interesting. And he said that the reason he started this Ask Gary V thing that he used to do about 10, 12 years ago was because he realized that when people ask him questions, it prompts him to say what are actually very useful bits of information. And he would never be able to just sit in his bedroom and say those things unprompted, as weird as that sounds. And what I'm getting around, and that was actually a bit of a realization for me when I heard him say that. And I've literally thought about this just for the last couple of weeks. It's very true. And the cool thing about webinars is when someone asks you a question and you actually have to answer a real person's question on the spot, it's very likely that if you cut that bit of video out in isolation, probably makes a pretty good TikTok video or LinkedIn video for a couple of minutes. So I think that there's definitely, you know, I would always think, take your answers to people's questions and how can you isolate those and share them in social.
Oh, absolutely. So that's what I was kind of talking about with that snackable video content. And that's our term. I don't know if it's kind of a broader use term. Sure.
Yeah, no, it is. I think it's just that I think it's specifically something about when you answer someone's question, you package it, you automatically are trying to package it into a succinct minute or so. Whereas you going through one of your slides, I think if you isolate that, it doesn't quite tend to pack quite the same punch.
Absolutely. So highly recommend again, and Gary Vee, definitely, you know, whatever you think about him, you know, he is a marketing genius. And I think it does speak to that. You know, if you have the answer, but you might not have thought of it yourself, asking that question or being asked that question obviously is going to produce a really interesting answer if you have that information. So actually one thing, one hack that we do, because, you know, we do parse out that video content and, you know, distribute it, is that in the beginning of our webinars, we ask ourselves kind of the big question so that you have big question, big answer before you proceed with the content. And that right there is a 1 minute video that you can use. Again, if you have Q&A where somebody asks a big question and you have a big answer, you can do that however many times you have those questions in the Q&A. So that's however many, you know, pieces of content that you can produce. But I agree, you know, when you go through a slide, it's not as succinct as a question and an answer to that question. So that's why we kind of hack it and put it in the beginning. But you can certainly do that with the Q&A as well.
Anything else to talk about after the webinar itself?
I think the only other thing that I would say as a less kind of tangible way of measuring an event's success is looking for overall growth. Obviously, when people start hosting webinars or, you know, are kind of newer to webinars, they don't really know how successful they are, or if they're not getting a ton of numbers on the board, you know, they're feeling a little bit, you know, let down by the experience. But I would say one of the biggest indicators of success to look for outside of the things like the surveys and, you know, the interaction and things like that is for growth over time. So are we getting repeat attendees? Are we consistently getting, you know, happy survey responses? Are we growing the registration and attendance over time? I mean, looking at those numbers is really going to give you those warm, fuzzy feelings that you're doing something right. And if you're not seeing any growth, you might want to think about changing some things. So again, I've referenced that benchmark report a few times. Again, I do highly recommend checking it out. But what we see is, you know, again, using polls to your advantage, like we talked about with the 1-2 punch, or setting yourself up, you know, with more attendee engagement opportunities, using the Q&A, sharing offers, things like that, changing up your strategy. Don't be afraid to test and then learn from those experiences. That's kind of what I would leave you with like some of those less tangible ways to measure that success. Because people are always wondering, what's successful, what isn't. And, you know, obviously, there's a line there. And for newbies or for folks who have been doing it forever, I would always look at your growth over time.
Okay. So that's, have you got anything else to say about measuring the success of a webinar? And have you got any specific examples that you've seen of successes?
Mm-hmm. I mean, when we talk about, like, for example, benchmarking, you know, just in general, like, people always are kind of curious, like, how many registrants are kind of the average? And, you know, again, this benchmark report in, you know, what we're specifically looking at is, you know, B2B marketing webinars. So obviously, there are things like lifestyle webinars, there are, you know, B2C, there's all sorts of things that we could talk about. But, you know, in this particular benchmark report, what we saw is that the average registration rate of a webinar is around 230 registrants. So obviously, day of the week, time of day, you know, a lot of things kind of impact those numbers. But if we, again, are kind of looking for, like, what is the industry telling us, you know, what is the benchmark, it's around there. And then, you know, shoot for that as a goal if you're not there yet. Or if you're already there, you know, obviously strive to do better, gather more, and then, you know, look at that success over time.
What about retention? Is that's important, how long people stay? You know, what percentage? Can you see that in most webinar platforms? And what's good?
Right. So really, really good question. So obviously, each platform is going to have a different kind of set of data or analytics that they produce. With Big Marker, at least, what I can tell you is that we measure a couple of things. The first thing is duration. So you're going to see time spent in the session for each individual attendee, as well as the average for that entire session. So you'll see, okay, average was about, let's say, 35 minutes, and Jane Doe, she was in for 26 minutes, you know, something like that. We also measure something called engagement. Engagement is time spent on the actual tab of the session. I call this the paying attention metric. So again, you see it for individuals and also the averages. But something that we do that I think is especially interesting is that we measure on 5-minute increments engagement over the session. So you actually have some sort of, like, bell curve that shows you, okay, you know, between minutes 0 through 5, you have X percent in number engaged, minutes 5 through 10, so on and so forth throughout the duration of your webinar. And it really kind of helps you track how long people are staying engaged, where they dropped off. And to make things more interesting, again, referencing that benchmark report data, when we look at things like polls and things like that, there's obviously a best and a worst time to trigger them. That's why I was suggesting we poll them early. We, you know, we kind of give them that 1-2 punch, or we, you know, send a couple throughout the session, because it's keeping them engaged early on. The worst time to send a poll is right smack dab in the middle of your session if you haven't really connected with them yet. And the reason probably is that they might not be on the tab of your session for. Again, we can measure that through the engagement score, but they're kind of might be checking their email or multitasking or just zoning out. And they're like, oh, shoot, that poll happened, you know, I'll get the next one, kind of thing. And so it is really, really interesting information. But it really does help us understand how people are engaged throughout the session, and how we can kind of boost those engagement scores, if you will.
It's true, isn't it? I suppose, you know, if you think about it, if someone actually attends your webinar, that is pretty special. It's a bloody miracle that anyone's actually turned up to your webinar. When you think about it, that someone's put time aside in their day. You've achieved so much by having them arrive. You know what I mean? And to really kick it over the line is to keep them engaged and make the most of the investment that person made in coming to listen to you for an hour. So I really appreciate your tips on improving that. I think that's all we've got time for. I think we've been going for about 50 minutes and definitely heard lots there. Is anything else that you wanted to say, or you think I should have asked?
The only thing that I would say is, like, what are we expecting for the future of webinars? I think that's a big question that we always seem to get. And I think what we're seeing, and this kind of obviously is what we would expect, you know, especially coming out of the pandemic and just, you know, being a little bit more virtual, a little bit more technically advanced as the world, as a human population, is that shorter is typically better. So, we see shorter webinars, 30, 45 minutes, 20 minutes is another kind of thing that we're seeing a little bit more. And it's really just combating that Zoom fatigue. And like you mentioned, people, it's a miracle that people show up. And so we want to really give them something, but we also don't want to take up too much of their time. And so it's aligning with their busy schedules. And it's just, kind of producing, hopefully, a higher turnout rate. And then again, we're also just seeing more interactive content in general. People are understanding the value of webinars. They understand the value of, again, people's time live. We have this captive audience. We want something in return from them. Let's poll them. Let's ask them questions. Let's provide handouts or offers for them to click or download or interact with. So that is all really, really big and fun and special. And then, of course, using just more data capture and doing stuff with that information, progressive profiling, again, is a term that we see a lot of. So building more robust profile data, by auto-filling registration forms, for example, or having conditional forms based on, previously submitted form data. And then also, again, just making it a little bit more experiential and gathering that poll data and so forth. So that's the only thing that I would add that we may not have covered is just what the future looks like. And it's certainly very bright. So webinars aren't going anywhere anytime soon. And definitely excited and happy to talk about them today.
Oh, that's great. Well, Hannah, thank you so much for sharing all this fantastic information. It's been really interesting for me, and I'm sure our listeners as well, anyone who's even thinking about running a webinar. Look, I've only just got one more question for you. Where can people find you and connect with you online?
Thanks for asking. And again, thank you for having me. LinkedIn is definitely the best place to find me. So you can find me on LinkedIn by searching Hannah Scherer, and that's S-C-H-E-R-E-R. And I'd love to connect and hear from you. So connect with me there. And again, thank you, Will, for having me. It's been a pleasure.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you, Hannah. Thanks a lot. And hopefully chat to you again soon. See ya.
See ya. Bye now.
If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about transforming your marketing career through certified online training, head to digitalmarketinginstitute.com. Thanks for listening.